Hi, Sam Gindin. Welcome to KABU. Sam Gindin was research director of the Canadian Auto Workers Union for 26 years. He writes a lot, co-author with Leo Banich, The Making of Global Capitalism. He also writes op-eds, policy and strategy articles, consults with unions in their struggles. You can find a lot of his work on the website Socialist Project, The Bullet. Recently, he's been examining the struggle in Oshawa, Canada. Oshawa's 60 miles from Toronto, both on Lake Ontario. It's sort of an industrial suburb where General Motors just fired its last 5,000 workers. At its peak, it had 23,000. In his writing about Oshawa, Sam Gindin's major concern is not that auto production there has ended. His concern is that GM is leaving thousands of highly skilled, productive workers and their families without jobs and income. And it's also leaving a completely up-to-date set of factories and expensive transportation and other infrastructure. It's a huge industrial complex, an industrial complex that could, with its highly skilled and motivated labor force, could in a short time be converted to produce what we really need: wind turbines, storage batteries, electric vehicles of every type, farming equipment for regenerative agriculture. If you believe the climate scientists, we'd need them quickly to stop global warming. So, Sam, tell us about Oshawa, General Motors, their plans, the union, the struggle, and then we can get into the struggle to convert the Oshawa complex to make the things we really need.
Okay. Oshawa was, not too long ago, the largest auto complex in America. It had three assembly plants. It had battery plants. It had all kinds of internal component plants, radio plants, etc. And like the auto industry generally in North America, the number of jobs have constantly fallen. There's probably 450,000 or so at the end of the 70s. UAW and CAW, GM workers, that's down to 50 to 60,000 now. So, you know, almost 90% of the jobs have gone. And the catch has been that in every round of negotiations, the company promised jobs if the workers would make concessions. That just kept repeating itself, and the jobs kept falling. So that's the tragedy of there not being an adequate union response as it just kind of managed the downscaling of the workforce. And to have a union response, it requires a number of things. One is it's time to think beyond GM. GM is not going to solve this problem, and trying to be militant in bargaining, you can fight for all kinds of things, but jobs isn't one of them. Jobs is something that's larger and political, and to just feign militancy gets you into the trap of sounding militant and then making a concession to get the jobs. You're arguing on the company's terms. That's one point. The second point is somehow we have to deal with the larger question of economic restructuring, because the system as it is isn't working for working people. They're not getting either the security or the decent wages. So that's another major problem. How do you deal with economic restructuring generally, not just General Motors? And I guess the third question is what you're getting at. If you're going to do something that's radical and political, you need to have the public with you. And you can't have the public with you unless you're making demands that aren't just for yourself, but that plug into something that's socially crucial. And the obvious thing there is to address the environment. So the question is, can you put all these things together? The question of the corporations not going to solve our problems, the question of dealing with restructuring and not leaving that just to competitive forces and globalization, and the question of addressing the environment. And all this is wrapped up into unions becoming something other than they've been, because they've just been staggered and reeling and disoriented with lower expectations, and they're really in trouble in the private sector. So they really have to rethink what they are, and that also means rethinking what kind of a vision you have and the question of politics that goes with it.
Oshawa was a completely modern industrial complex with all the infrastructure that's required, the transportation, the electricity, and General Motors is walking away, perhaps to sell some of the equipment to other auto firms. But you have a plan B, not plan A, just to try and eke out a few jobs that then get eliminated in a couple of years. Tell us about plan B and what really should happen.
Plan B involves thinking big. It means stopping to just think, going to negotiate your way out of this problem with General Motors. That was never true, and just empirically, it's been a failure. So we need to think bigger, and we need to think of something else. And the obvious thing to think about is, if General Motors doesn't want it, why don't we take it and put it under public ownership and talk about converting, you know, taking all these skills that the workers have, taking this really large facility, taking the equipment that's there, the assembly operations, the paint shop, the stamping facility, coordinating it with nearby components plants. And components plants are usually quite flexible. They can make other things. It doesn't just have to be plugged into the auto industry. And think about what we can do. And the obvious thing is to start planning for doing something around the environment. And one of the things that we've been talking about there with workers is moving to electric vehicles. And crucial to thinking about this is we don't want to get into a position of we convert to something and then we compete with the world and then have to worry about standards in China or Mexico or even in the southern United States that are going to undermine us. So we've argued very much that you have to link this to some kind of planning. It has to involve the state being much more aggressive about improving environmental standards, so it's forcing people to move away from the carbon economy, and also using the state, because there's a lot of vehicles that the state buys. Public transit is obviously critical. We don't just want to move to more cars, but we have all kinds of vehicles for the post office, for hydro, that are going to continue to exist, and we want the government to have a plan to expand the number of those, convert them to electric vehicles, and that would be a base for converting Ottawa to electric vehicles. And it could go along with doing all kinds of things related to the environment that you mentioned earlier in terms of wind turbines and refurbishing of homes, offices. Because, I mean, the reality is, if we're serious about the environment, everything about what we make, how we live, work, wherever we work, offices, how we play, everything, travel, everything is going to have to be changed. So if it's going to have to be changed, why don't we start talking about it? And eventually the car companies themselves will be moving to electrical vehicles, but they're doing everything they can to delay that because they're making a lot of money on the existing cars, so they're not in a hurry to do that. And when they do get around to doing it, it's not likely that they're going to do it in places like Oshawa because they have cheaper places that they could do it. So we need to think about democratic planning. We have to ask this question of why do we leave the future, especially when the future is so dangerous in terms of the environment, to these private corporations. That's not democratic. You can't have a democratic society if those key decisions are made by private companies. And why don't we start talking about creating a capacity to do this kind of conversion? We should, in every community, have some kind of a research center that's examining what capacities we have, what skills we have, what equipment, and what do we need to think about? Hire hundreds of young engineers to start thinking about what we're going to need and how we can convert these things. And that has to be linked to creating the demand for them. If the state isn't ready to create a demand for these by raising standards and forcing some kind of restructuring, it wouldn't work either. So all of this has to come together. You know, a certain kind of decentralization, a certain kind of planning, absolutely taking on private power. And one of the things I'd really emphasize is the environmental movement has done a terrific job of getting the environment on the agenda. But it's done it by being quite general and abstract in a way that most people can agree. Green New Deal sounds good. People argue about should we spend $1 trillion, should we spend $1.2 trillion. It doesn't mean anything to workers. For a worker to hear that they're promising you a just transition when you don't control anything, they don't believe it. They just know that they're going to lose their job. And what is this just transition? The whole point about ecology is that everything's interrelated. The environment is a major emerging and present crisis. If we're going to do anything about it, it's so big that it requires planning. It can't just be left to markets and fragmented profitability. So it means planning. And we have to say that explicitly. And if you want to plan, you have to control what you're planning. So we have to talk about changing property relations in terms of production. And that's the kind of discussion that has to take place. And then the environmental movement can't just see this as moral lecturing. It has to engage workers in struggle. And there's plants closing everywhere. And if there actually was a political intervention by for example, Democratic Socialists of America, other lefties, to wherever this is happening, to start raising the question of conversion and putting that conversion into a larger plan, then you'd be engaging workers. You'd be talking about the direct lives, and you'd be offering something that is very hard. You have to organize. We don't have the base for it yet. But it's something that's possible as an answer. That's what the challenge is.
This is KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Canadian Sam Gindin, co-wrote the book, The Making of Global Capitalism. He also writes on working class struggles, union struggles, particularly in the auto industry. We've been talking about how General Motors has just closed down its once biggest auto complex. It was in Oshawa, Canada. Sam, that sounds great. The conservatives, of course, the powers that be, that whole conservative establishment, and of course even most politicians, will say, how can you even talk about that? The state is so inefficient, it's so corrupt. How can it do planning? We have to work with market forces and allow the people to vote through the market. Has high priests who say that, economists, historians, they're completely wedded to this sort of capitalist mythology of the failures of the state. We have to tell a different story.
But we have to be honest about our own problems, too. When you list the powers that be, there's also the problem of unions who have been raising this or thinking about how unions would have to change themselves to really address this. And we have to admit that the state is a problem. It's a capitalist state. It's developed the capacities to run a capitalist economy, to control labor, to manage discontent. It hasn't developed capacities for planning. So what we're talking about when we raise this is a transformation of the state. It's about actually developing the capacities to not only plan, but to plan democratically. And we should be honest about, yeah, it's hard. But the reality is that the market is failing in terms of the promise of giving people rich lives in every sense of the word. And we have to think about security as an important value. We have to think about equality. Those are all things that the market fails in. It's failing in the environment. It's failing in equality. It's failing in security. It's failing in terms of a rich personal life. So what economists consider exceptions, those are actually what's most important. And that's what the market is failing. So we have to be honest about it. It's not going to be easy to change. It is going to be hard. We'll go through some tough times, and we have to say, well, we accept it because the other road is a dead-end street. The thing about change is we have to develop not just the ideas and the policies on paper, but we have to build the working class into the kind of social force that's confident about its standing for what's good and what's right, and being able to challenge business hegemony. And I think business is very vulnerable now.
Sam, let me challenge you, though, on one of your points. You pointed out we don't have the capacity now for that planning. The state is completely captured by capital and sort of tries to manage it in some ways, supporting corporate power. We have examples, though, of mass conversion. The example often cited is, of course, World War II, but there are other examples later than that in the world, the way Japan industrialized and Korea and various other places. There was a huge amount of planning, although on capitalist terms, but by the state. It seems to me we can look to that period when it became necessary to do planning, when there was a threat that couldn't be met by private capital. The U.S. state, at least, stepped in. It's on the Roosevelt period, the New Deal. Of course, it was World War II that really led to the mobilization and got us out of the Depression. Well, this is going to be like World War II, it seems to me, what we're facing. People are going to recognize the enormous threat to climate change. Hopefully it's not too late when they recognize it, but there will become a point when great crisis, food prices spiking, great cities underwater, unable to produce anything, people scrambling to stay alive, in the countryside as well. Many great areas of the world are going to be triaged. Transportation will be stopped. It seems to me that's sort of likely in our future, say the climate scientists. A little bit before that point, if we're lucky, It seems to me that we could get a majority of people saying we have to change things. Things have to change radically. If we're really smart about it, now we can start doing that planning and create models of cities like Oshawa and Toronto that would provide models for the entire reconstruction of the economy and society that'll be necessary.
Well, you know, I'm very sympathetic, and I've used the example of the war myself because it shows the potential to do things. There's a potential to convert, technically. I mean, what the war shows that in 1945 we could actually convert it. From a technical perspective, it's possible. But the question is the social take on this. I mean, one of the things that happened during the wartime was that a lot of businessmen went in and did a lot of the planning. And part of the outcome of that was that rather than developing the capacities of the state to plan, as soon as these businessmen left, that capacity wasn't there. And I think they misunderstood that. They didn't want that kind of autonomous capacity for the state. So I want to emphasize a couple of things. One is that it's not just that the state is captured by business and we should capture it. It's that the state has developed historically for decades and decades. It has certain capacities for certain kinds of planning, but it doesn't have the kind of capacities for overall planning of a whole economy in normal times. I'm talking about even if you took over, and you're going to see this as a permanent kind of a planning to deal with the environment, not just a temporary. And it doesn't have the capacity to figure out how to really do it democratically. I'm just saying that we see the potentials in particular examples. We see the potentials in the war. They're very important. You're absolutely right to raise them. But we also have to recognize that this is still part of developing. It's developing our way of thinking and doing and organizing and conducting political activity, but also of transforming the state so that you can really do these things. We shouldn't underestimate how difficult it would be. It can sound scary and overwhelming. We just have to see it as it's absolutely necessary, exactly in terms of that you described, and we have to figure out how to do it. You know, we have to have some faith that as human beings, if we remove some of these barriers of capitalism, we can do it.
That was Bill Resnick and Sam Jindin talking about UAW, United Auto Workers in Canada, and the closing of the General Motors plant in Oshawa. It was an industrial suburb of Toronto. We'll air the second part of their conversation on next week's Old Mole. They've been talking about retooling the auto industry and the industrial parks in Oshawa in particular to combat climate change and to produce what the public and not capital needs.